At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers, the show in which we try and answer some of life's meaningful and meaningless questions. My name is Marcus. Hello, Sarah.
Hello there.
And hello, Chris.
Hiya.
Now, everybody, whether it's daily, weekly, monthly, or yearly, we all use some form of transport. And we've all seen or experienced something out of the ordinary when in transit. Today, we're answering this question. What's your strangest transport-related experience?
Well, I'll tell you what, I was inspired to get us to answer this question, actually, because very recently I discovered, did you know you can find out your, not just your kind of overall rating on Uber, but you can see how many times you've been given 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1 stars?
Okay,
so I thought, I'm going to find out, because I know that I'm a delight.
Yes.
It's an honour to have me in any vehicle, and I know that
passenger.
I really am, aren't I? I mean, you can imagine it, can't you?
Uh-huh.
So anyway, I go for my, you've got to sort of request your data and all that stuff. And I got my scores, and I tell you what, I'm shook. I am shooken.
Oh dear.
Because I got 3 1 stars.
No.
I am not a one-star passenger.
That's horrendous. That's the lowest you could get.
Honestly, so I started thinking back of who would have given me 1 star? Firstly, I thought there have definitely been times when I've had an ex-boyfriend or someone like that who's been too drunk and has kind of, like, we've never had a sixident, but we've been close.
Sixident.
But yeah, I couldn't believe it. And then I thought back and I was like, there's one guy. I was like, oh, I wonder if it was him. Because this was a while ago. I had been through a breakup and I decided I was, you know, moving out of my flat that night. You know, I went to my sister's and I got this Uber and I'm sort of, you know, I'm bawling my eyes out in the back of this Uber,
and clearly
distraught. But that's, you know, oh, come on, I'm sure they deal with many, many crying.
One star.
You know. But then this guy,
I'll make her night better. I'll ruin her rating.
That's super.
Oh, but this
guy doesn't need to pick me up.
Said so, like, you know, as I said, I'm like snuffling away in the back, and he decides to strike up conversation, saying, "So do you own your flat or do you rent it?" And I was like, that's... what? And I was like,
a strange start to a conversation.
Especially when someone's crying, right?
Yeah.
And I rent it. And he said, well, you know, you shouldn't be renting. It's really, you're throwing your money away. You want to get the property ladder. And I was like, I know, I do. I'm never going to be able to now because I'm single.
Did he think you were crying because you just realised, oh my goodness, I could have afforded a flat in London, which obviously no one can. And then suddenly is that what it was? You're like, do you know what? She's crying because it's dawned on her all that money she's thrown away.
Honestly,
what always helps people who are upset is that really hard advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And telling them
nothing to do with it.
Do you know what?
Telling them they should do something that they actually have no way of doing.
Empathy is overrated. Tell them what to do.
Honestly, I couldn't believe it. And I was like, and so obviously I'm not really responding. Like, I didn't say like, can we stop this conversation or anything? But I was kind of giving one word answers and in between blowing my nose. And I was like, I bet it was him. I bet he gave me 1 star.
One word answers, 1 star review.
Exactly. Oh. Yeah.
But you had 3 of them, Sarah. I mean,
I don't know. I don't know what it was.
It is quite strange because I very seldom, in fact, I can't remember the last time I used an Uber, but I did go through a little patch of using Uber for whatever reason. And it was a few years ago now. And I can remember my rating was always like 4.8 or 4.85. It was just quite high. And I got to 5 stars.
What?
Yeah, I got to like I got to 4.98 or something.
Which is that is impressive.
Yeah, but then it went down to like 4.8
7 or something. I remember thinking, hang about, who's
gave
just
you some 1 stars?
Well, I don't know. I need to go, I need to check. I don't know if I can still check now. But
I'll show you how to do it later.
Well, yeah, but what I find intriguing is someone, it's more likely that someone's gone, yeah, I have 3 out of 5. And you think, well, hang on.
What? Yeah, I don't. I can't lower you that much, though. Unless you've not got many reviews on there.
Yeah, no, as I say, it would only be like a handful of times I would have used it. But I like the thought of someone's gone, well, they weren't sick, they didn't urinate themselves, they didn't say anything abusive. So that's 3 stars. That's your kind of bog standard for anything like that. But didn't really strike up any chat. He didn't add anything. Didn't deserve his tip, essentially. Do you know what I mean? It's when you pay the bill and nothing else. There's no tip.
Do they rate us after we rate them? Are they like, right, I've got your 5 stars.
No, they can't
get 5.
Independent.
They can't see.
Okay. So it's not like, ha, 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 I've got yours, I'm going to stitch you right up.
Mm-hmm. As you say, for someone who hasn't, you know, soiled themselves, been a racist, or, you know, caused any damage, I don't really, like, I am...
I like the idea they might still get a 2 and you got a 1.
Honestly! Like,
yeah, I that's incredible. I mean,
you're going to hunt them down?
Yes, that would be very fitting with Sarah's character, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You're trying to get give me at least 4 stars, you know. But during this Uber time that I had a number of years ago, as I say, I got chatting to an Uber driver, and look, we're talking about you know, our strangest travel related experiences. Well, I'm going to talk about this chap's strangest travel related experiences just for a moment, if you will, everybody. And I had a fascinating conversation with him. I may have said this before on the podcast, forgive me if I have, but I think it is definitely worth saying again, at the risk of repeating myself in the context of this question. And this guy had been a driver for many, many years with Uber and other companies. And he said, in London, you never, ever know if you're called out to a job. You never know who you're going to pick up in London. Yeah. You never know who's going to come out of that door. He said, you can be in some of the wealthiest neighborhoods. You can be in some of the poorest neighborhoods. You never know. And he said, the amount of times that he'll be asked to go into the building or at least knock on the door, and you knock on the door, there's a policeman behind some bars, and it's a halfway house.
What?
So someone who has been released from prison, who is literally, you know, as a halfway house is, you're not quite ready to be fully integrated in society. And there's, hence it's called halfway house. And you're picking up somebody who is being rehabilitated into society, and maybe one or two people who are making sure that that rehabilitation goes through seamlessly. Or he said a classic one was, you go to a particularly rich neighborhood in London called South Kensington. And you drive outside and you wait, and a young lady wearing a rather skimpy outfit will get in, and always she will say, City of London, please, where all the bankers are and everything. And he would drive down there, and she would say, can you just wait here for like 20 or 30 minutes? I'll be back. Yeah. And then she would presumably go up and provide her service and come back down, and then go, oh, back to South Kensington, please.
Wow.
But the strangest thing that he said was that he would sometimes drive those, you know, those stretched Humvees. Or those stretched limos.
Prom night car.
Exactly, yeah. And again, you never know who you're going to pick up, because you think, oh, you usually see hen do's or snag do's or prom parties, as you say. And he said that there was, I don't know, sort of half a dozen or whatever adult couples get in. And and he was thinking, it all looks a bit ordinary. They're not sort of wearing, you know, funny coloured hats, or, you know, there's no tinsel.
No L plates.
Yeah, exactly. And none of that kind of stuff. And they got in the back, and he was instructed, oh, just drive around.
Oh, no.
And he was like,
oh, no.
Okay. And then suddenly a swingers party orgy kicked off in the back.
No.
Can you
put a car?
I mean, it would really, you'd try and keep your eyes on the road, but that's quite distracting.
Well, he just said it was incredible.
Yeah, you'd be taking the corners hard, wouldn't you, just for that? Speed into a corner.
Have this, you dirty deviants, yeah.
Some arse just smacks against the window.
Well, he said like he found himself up in the centre of London, like by Piccadilly Circus. You know, for those who don't know, it's that area, you know, in London, often you get postcards and so on. You got all the lights and, you know, almost like the London equivalent of Times Square in New York or something. Mm. And he said he suddenly was at the lights there. And of course, he can look out the window and just see people going about, you know, of an evening. And he's just like, if I just wound down the windows now, if anybody saw, you know.
Wow.
Incredible.
Yeah, get a breeze in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cool off your dirty so and so's.
That reminds me, we had a
that reminds you. That well, shouldn't trigger any memories.
Organized.
Well, Piccadilly Circus. No, basically, calm yourselves. I am not that interesting. No, I did ask. I asked the listeners if they had any stories, and we had quite a good taxi related story sent in. I'm just going to read this out because this is from the lovely JK. Has a wonderful turn of phrase.
Rowling.
So,
big fan.
So he says, "This is my first day in Mumbai, as I had moved here to study film. Ooh. As my cab zoomed through the streets, flanked with skyscrapers, I looked around in awe at the city I'd romanticized from afar for so long. Mm-hmm. When suddenly the driver said, 'Look at all these tall buildings without any railings or fences. There's nothing protecting you if I decide to push you off one of those.' He wasn't smiling. He didn't look menacing, but was just staring straight ahead into nothingness. I had no idea how to react. He then stopped the car as he went to use the public urinal, leaving me to seriously contemplate getting the F out of his car.
Wow.
But I was exhausted and I had two heavy bags with me, so I decided to stick with him. The rest of the ride was pretty uneventful. He just told me about his affair with his boss's wife. Pretty tame in comparison to the first half of the journey.
What I'd like to know, JK, is if you're in Mumbai, do you speak Indian or was the guy actually speaking in English? Like, he's just learnt these lines in English to freak people out.
Honestly.
I think,
well,
there's so many languages in India, isn't there, that he's either speaking, probably, I mean, I would guess maybe Hindi, which is one of the more...
Do you reckon, like, it's English, probably this guy's got a cracking sense of humour? Like,
is it just a really dry deadpan? But also, like, if you're a new, and also, like, I don't know where JK is from, if he's from somewhere else in India, or if he's, you know, from the UK, I don't know. But especially if you've never been to the city before and someone starts cracking those jokes, you're a bit like,
But I find that I think most people, my guess would be most people's strangest transport related experiences would be in taxis.
I would say so.
That's probably the case for me, actually. Because taxi drivers as well, they get so many people coming in and out of their taxis. I just don't think they don't care. Just why not? I mean, some taxi drivers would be very, very helpful. I mean, I went to Liverpool once and the taxi drivers, and I hear that the same can be in London with your black cabbies, you know, when they're in London, obviously they're you know, many years in London's black cabs have you know, had a sort of certain reputation and so on. And the guy was just suddenly giving us a little sort of tourist, you know, became a tourist guide.
Oh, great.
And which was very nice. But he went over the top because he started saying, oh, this building was this. And you think, okay, well, I didn't ask for this, but this is very nice, you know. And obviously people in Liverpool tend to be quite friendly and so on. And then he just goes, you know, I think Liverpool's the most historical city in the world. And I thought, I'm glad you're proud of where you're from. But I just immediately thought, it's, you know, Damascus,
it's not, though,
you know,
it?
Jerusalem, do you know what I mean?
Like, I've heard of
Cairo,
Rome.
You know. Like, yeah. Come on, mate. But you don't want
Athens, maybe?
Yeah.
Also, you don't tell a Scouse that Liverpool isn't the most historic city in the world. You don't have that conversation, do you?
Well, yeah, indeed. I mean, I was in Istanbul a number of years ago and we got a taxi. In Istanbul, the way the city is, there's a big old river that goes through it. There's a lot of bridges. And if you want to get from one side to the other, you know, as with any kind of bridges, you know, they can go up and down because the boat's coming through and timings and blah, 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 blah. And we were on one side of the river and we were going to the other. And this taxi driver just seemed hell-bent in getting us over the other side as quickly as possible.
As the bridge is raised up.
As the bridges, it was like, oh, look, the lights are going. Now, I assume, I mean, I don't know. Maybe they go like down one by the other. They don't all go down as one because maybe they don't need to. But one will go down and then the next one. I don't know how it works, but that in my mind is must be because we were suddenly speeding. And at one point, he was going 105 miles an hour.
Oh, my God.
Because we were all like, bloody hellfire. Like, and we were a bit younger at the time. So it was kind of like, this is absolutely brilliant and also terrifying in equal measure kind of thing. You know, when there's that emotion.
Sticking your head out the window. Woo!
Yeah. But you know when, like, fear and excitement meet? Mm. It was like that. And you sort of go, oh, I shouldn't, but I just a little bit more. And... And he was going, and eventually we got over there. And I remember he asked for a tip, cheeky bugger, because basically he'd ensured we got over to the other side. And I thought, was that his shtick kind of thing of, well, I made sure. And I was like, yes, but nearly at the expense of everybody's life. Yeah, so that was something that stuck in the memory. I also had a very interesting experience in a taxi in Buenos Aires when we got in a taxi, as normal, and suddenly this driver started to communicate to us using a puppet. Suddenly this puppet appeared over the front seat and he would just start talking to us and you just, nothing can really prepare you for that. And it turned, his name was Rodolfo. I remember that much.
The puppet or the driver,
I believe. And I can't remember the puppet's name. And he started to explain to us that he's like this local celebrity and that everyone who gets in his taxi, I mean, like a part of it was quite sweet and another part of it was quite worrying. Now, maybe that's just because everything's been bastardized, you know, nowadays that you can't, some people just can't be nice, if you see what I mean.
Did the puppet turn around and say, look at all those tall buildings. What if I pushed you off?
The puppet went, he keeps me hostage. Please help me get out of it. He had all these newspaper cuttings of him in like local newspapers, like how he was this local celebrity. And whenever people got in his taxi, you know, like with children, he would often try and, you know, entertain them with a puppet and blah, blah, blah. And I was thinking, both hands on the wheel, 10 to 2.
Yeah.
But also, he had a guest book that if you got into a taxi, you'd sign. And it was like reams and reams of signatures and so on. So we obviously signed it and all. But it was very, very strange. I'd never experienced anything quite like that.
Immediately my mind goes to, did he then try and charge you more money? Because with any time people do this, like when I'm abroad, I'm worried they're going to do that. And then they're going to go, because of that, $50 or whatever it ends up costing.
Yeah, I don't think that was the case, but I can't quite remember.
He was just a genuinely entertaining chap who wanted to make your day brighter.
Yeah, good old Rodolfo.
Good old sock man.
Yeah, sock. Yeah, a bit more sophisticated, the puppet. It wasn't just a holy sock. What about you, Chris, though? Any strange, interesting transport-related tales?
Yeah, I've got one. I apologise. I may have shared this on a previous episode, but I'll repeat it again now. In a previous job, I worked for the UN for quite a while, and I was going to Burundi, and we have a booking agent who would book all of our flights, and brilliantly decided to book me a flight to Kenya, and then another flight from Kenya to Burundi. The problem with that is that it wasn't one journey. Mm-hmm. And it was two separate journeys where my luggage would have to get unloaded from one flight and loaded onto the other. And you'd have to go through all that stuff. There was an hour between connections.
Oh dear. An hour between connections, you know, even in a well-drilled European airport is not enough.
Dangerous.
No.
Or it's tight.
And so I kind of realize on the flight, like, oh no, my luggage is gonna go, oh, I'm gonna have to get it. Oh, I've been to Nairobi before. This is gonna take at least an hour to get out.
Yeah.
To get my visa, because you pay for it when you get there, to pick up my luggage. Well, you know, sometimes luggage you can be waiting for ages and then to get on there. And I'm thinking, there's no way on earth I am going to make this flight. And I think I was about 1 a.m. in Nairobi as well. So I'm then like, I've got nowhere to stay. This is getting quite stressful. Anyway, being the man I am, did do a little pray on the journey. And then I come out of the plane and then I go down the steps at the bottom of a plane. I just pick any guy with a Visi jacket. And I'm like, great, this is my situation. I need help. And he just looked at me and laughed. And was like, nah, it's not going to happen. But then he almost like had this complete change of heart. And he just said, come with me. And he just waved me. And then we were kind of walking through kind of bits of the airport. To cut a very long story short, he essentially smuggled me through customs via a side room. And not only, I'm also thinking he's got my passport. So I'm, again, you're a bit skeptical. Like, I might not get back and I've got no passport as well.
Am I about to get murdered?
You're at the mercy of this guy,
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think he had my passport to make sure that if I did do a runner and I wasn't legit, that actually he had some element of kind of coercion or control in them. I guess in a good way. And then the miracle is my bag is the first off of the conveyor belt. So I get that. He then smuggles me back. Yeah, just remember, like, smuggling people through customs is highly illegal. and then he's he gets me on one of those buggies that you can drive through the airport at high speeds.
Oh, amazing.
The bit, and he points to this plane in the distance and is like, go, run. And I had to run across the time. It's like a action movie, although I was sweating and didn't look very actiony.
I had to run
across the tarmac, and then they're literally at the door of the plane waving me on saying, hurry, the plane's about to leave.
I'm
also in like probably a suit as well, so it's awful. Anyway, I make the flight, and I just remember sat down and just thinking, thank you sweet Lord, thank you. That was not only a story to tell, but an answered prayer for me. And it was just one of those things where I'm like, I don't think, like, you only reflect on it afterwards, the fact that someone smuggled you through an airport customs. And also, quite worrying how easy that was to do, let's be honest.
Yeah. So,
well, when you're with the person who knows, I've had that with a connecting flight where I had to run through the airport where my mate and I, we were landing in Frankfurt, I think it was, and I can't remember which European city it was, not that that's particularly important. And then we were going on to Caracas in Venezuela because it was the start of a backpacking adventure to South America. But the connection was very, very, like, there's been a delay, and this little chap in the airport went, right, who's going to Venezuela? And there was about five of us. And he was like, right, we've got to go now. And he just turned around and bolted. And we all looked at each other and we were like, follow, we have to, don't let him out of your sight, you know. And
he was,
and he was sort of a little curious looking chap. You know, it was like some sort of little elf or something, Lord of the Rings or something.
Dodging between the suitcases.
Yeah, exactly. He's sort of ducking down into sort of secret doorways, and we're sort of following through. And we're like, where on earth are we? Then you come out, and oh, there's the airport again, and oh, it's gone, and then we're there. And and we just got on the flight. And as we were getting on the flight, they went, by the way, we can't guarantee your bags are going to be on the flight kind of thing. And we're like, well, you tell us now. We're backpacking. It's not like we've got everything in there. Anyway, it ended up being fine. That was quite something.
I got one from a friend who I was there. So a friend and I went to America for a year to do this kind of vocational school type thing. And you know, when you go to America, they're quite strict on their kind of customs, and it can take quite a while to get.
They are miserable buggers,
and they're so inefficient. It takes forever.
They're so unwelcoming as well. Yeah. And what I hate about the customs in America is how they say, what's the purpose of your visit? I'm on holiday. Where are you staying? Like, before you finish your sentence, they then ask the next question. You think, if I'm some sort of, smuggling something illegal in the country, you're really not going to catch
me. I'm going to have a good
answer.
I'm actually going to have an address.
It's improved from those little slips that you had to fill out when you entered the States, which was, are you going to smuggle any guns or drugs into the country? Tick yes or no.
Have you or are you currently taking part in any act of genocide?
Yes. And then were you a part of were you part of the Nazi regime in the Second World War? And it's just like, I mean, what idiot is going to go, I better be honest. But then at the end it said, if you've answered yes to any of these, please like contact this number or something. Like, not only, you know, if you've had a few drinks and you kind of go, yes, actually I've given myself away, you then have to fully volunteer and phone the number and go, actually, where do I drive to get arrested and put in prison? Like, just nonsense.
Absolutely. Can you imagine though, going throughout your plane and going, hey guys, I'll do all the cards for you, don't worry about it, I'll fill in yours. I know it's a boring job, but I'll do it for you. And then stitching them all up. It'd be quite anyway, so a friend and I are going over there. So we've got these particular visas. You've got loads of paperwork. And as we get to the customs desk, he just goes, he's from Plymouth. He goes, mate, where have you put all your documents?
All right, mate, love.
Yeah, and I was like, they're in my hand luggage, mate. I nearly said his name then. Where are yours? He's like, I think I put them in my suitcase.
Oh, no.
Obviously, they're on the other side of the desk. And I was like, you idiot. Anyway, I think he's in there for 3 hours. In the end, I think they just got bored and let him go. And I think they thought his story was legit. And I'm having to ring up and say, like, are you going to deport him? Because I've got to get a car and get somewhere. So, like, if you're going to do it, just do it. Because I don't want to be waiting around for days in an airport to see if he's the new Tom Hanks and you'll ever let him go or not.
Those kind of things, a friend of mine was flying from Canada, I think maybe like Toronto to New York. And when he landed in New York, he went to leave and he couldn't find his passport. I must have left it on a plane. They went back, checked. It just wasn't there. And he had nothing. So he arrived. But obviously he'd got into, got on the flight. And he went up to the people at the other end in New York and was like, I'm so sorry. I don't have my passport with me. So, okay, come with us. And he said the first question they asked him was, so have you eaten your passport? How often does that happen for that to be your opening gambit? Like, absolutely extraordinary. Like, what, surely there must be some other experience. No, this happens all the time, people. They're not satisfied with the in-flight snacks and they turn to the passport and it looks quite tasty. He left it in the departure lounge, I think, or somewhere.
But he'd still been able to get onto the plane.
Yeah, maybe when he put it down on by the desk or something when they checked it, that it got left. So it was fine. So it was all sorted. But I love the fact, have you eaten your passport?
The first thing he asked.
Yeah. Because we can wait and you're gonna crap it out right now.
I've got one it's not quite so dramatic. Actually, this is my sister's story. She was many years ago flying from Cardiff to Belfast, which I don't even know if you can do that anymore.
I'm sure you can.
Cardiff Airport, they stopped a lot of the flights. Oh. But anyway, it was always a good laugh, that flight, Cardiff to Belfast. But she said, you know, they got onto the plane, doors are closed, and they're on the way to the runway. And, you know, the flight announcement says, ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard this EasyJet flight to Belfast. And this guy suddenly goes, what? Very loudly. And he goes, what do you mean? No, I'm going to Dublin.
Uh-oh.
And somehow this man had been allowed. He only got to the wrong gate, managed to get onto the plane. They'd let him onto the plane. And he was on the wrong flight.
Flipping.
He was on the wrong flight.
That's gutting, that is. But you're in for it. To be fair, it could be a lot worse. At least he could get a bus, which is like, at least he was a 2-hour bus journey away from where he was meant to go.
So it hadn't taken off yet, so they actually had to get him off the plane.
Oh, they did get him.
And they had to get his luggage off the plane. And yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It held everybody out.
So it was faff for everyone.
That's very frustrating.
But can you imagine that moment of suddenly being like, sorry, did they just say Belfast? What?
Yeah, blimey. I would like to take us away from flying for a moment, if I may.
That's all right.
I had a very, very interesting transport experience when I went with a church group to Romania, where they were. It was in this little town, which I mean, if you remember the time of the Romanian orphanages and all that, this little town had the biggest orphanage in the Romania at the time, obviously hadn't been used for many years, and you know, a lot of poverty there, blah 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 blah, etc etc. And there was a missionary from a local church back in Surrey that I knew, who used to go out there and do a lot of work, and she was helping to kind of fund and build what would be a youth center there, but at the start just needed some sort of manual labor, essentially. Anyway, a load of us went, yeah, fine, we'll go out there, it'll be a good adventure. And we drove a minibus from Surrey in southern England all the way to Romania, across Europe, essentially, which was a fascinating experience.
I bet.
And but when we returned, we were in Romania, and of course, sat-nav was a thing back then. This was about 2007, I think. So you did have sat-nav, but it wasn't as good now. And on the way back, this sat-nav suddenly took us off the main roads.
Oh, no.
And down these kind of, almost like dirt tracks. And I was thinking, there's a river there. Like, what, we look like we're traveling towards a river. This is the strangest thing. Now, I suppose, again, nowadays, because of the way technology is and everybody's got smartphones, you know, in every far-flung part of the planet, and we're a lot better connected. But you're still a bit like, what on earth is about to happen? And we got to basically, it took us all the way up to this river. And we were there like, what the hell's happened? And suddenly, this little raft with two men came floating across. And we were like, eh? And they, you know, we had to pay them two, you know, whatevers. And lei, I think the currency is in Romania, if my memory serves me well. And we drove onto this little raft and it took us across the river onto the other side and we were away. I was just like, what are the chances?
But was it hairy? Was it like a really scary, or was it like,
No. It was a calm river. I mean, it was, I don't know, we were probably on there for, you know, a few minutes getting across, you know.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like you...
Torrential.
Yeah, like a strong swimmer would probably fancy their chances getting to the other side kind of thing, you know. And it wasn't scary or anything like that.
He's just not expecting it. That's the thing.
But it was just so strange. Yeah. And I thought it was remarkable that this thing was, the sat-nav obviously recognised that this was a route.
Yeah, amazing. Which,
you know, in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, that was rather interesting as well. Any more from the listeners, Sarah?
Well, sorry to return us briefly to taxis.
That's fine.
As you said, I feel like everyone's got a taxi one, haven't they? But James Longley did message in, and he said, "My Uber driver once turned his headlights off while driving down a country lane at night. This was to prove to me that it was impossible to see if you had no lights."
What a genius. Okay.
Like, you're not wrong, but also, please don't.
Flipping, Laura,
I also had another Uber one from myself. One time, it was one of the main roads. I was trying to get home at that point to North London from West London. Uh-huh. And one of the big roads, the Westway, was shut.
Oh, yeah.
But this driver obviously didn't know the area. And he didn't realise that every time he tried to get back onto it, it was still shut. And the sat-nav didn't realise. And somehow, this was when, you know what, the massive Westfield shopping centre in West London, was part of that, was still sort of being built.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, I don't know how, he ended up getting into the building site, driving the building site,
blimey,
down into an underground car park.
Oh dear.
And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to die. Yeah. And in the end, I was like, where are you going? And he was like, oh, I don't know. The sat nav is confused. And I was like, I'm confused.
Yeah.
And so in the end, I had to just get him because he picked me up from a friend's house. I had to just take me back there. But this moment when we went into an underground, you know, like a, there was nobody there.
Yeah. That's why a black cabbie would be furious about that in London.
Oh,
because they
would
think, you should know the knowledge. Yeah. You should know your roads, even in London.
That did convince me of I know there are a lot of arguments around why Uber's not great, but that was one of those moments where I was like, this is really not good.
Yeah.
And I need to make sure I've got Liam Neeson on speed dial in case I am trafficked.
You know,
day.
You do have that moment of being like, am I being murdered?
Mm. Yeah. But I think that maybe could have been one of your one-star journeys, Sarah.
That was his fault.
Well,
I actually did, and I did complain to Uber about that, and I got my money back because it cost me about £40 of driving around in circles on the Westfield building site. So
there you go. Chris. So that's two out of the three. Yeah. So you've got one more person to find.
Someone else needs to own up.
Any more from you, Chris?
Yeah, I've got one which is quite frustrating. So I was in Sri Lanka a few years ago, and we were going from Kandy to a place called Adam's Peak. And I'd booked train journeys, and then I got an email saying that they'd been cancelled. So I was like, oh, that's annoying. Well, we'll just get a cab again. And it should have been a 2-hour cab journey, and it was a 10-hour cab journey where we got stuck in the most horrendous traffic, where literally everybody was getting out of the buses and cars. So like, and you're going inch by inch by inch by inch by inch for hours and hours and hours. And it got so bad at one point, it was torrential rain. The cabbie got out to see what was going. He was gone for half an hour. So we're just stuck there in this traffic. And my wife Sarah's like, I can't do this. I've got to go to the toilet. So she goes outside to, you know, have a wee in the bush, basically. Comes back, leeches all over her feet.
Oh! Wait,
It was one of these where you're just like, this is like a horror film. And then we finally get there. So we're doing this. You get there. I can't remember which was. It's like certain holiday, massive pilgrimage to the top of this Adam's Peak at this time of year. Yeah. Thousands of people doing it. We get to our hotel. We have a half an hour kip. Bearing in mind, we should have been there 8 hours before to do it. We're tired. Half an hour kip. Get up the top of the mountain. We do that. Come back down. I check my emails. That train journey wasn't cancelled. It was the other one. So we could have avoided everything. And it was about a month later, I said to Sarah, my wife, I've got to confess that we didn't have to do that journey.
I love how you had to give it a month for that to come.
I think I was just so disappointed in not reading the email properly. I couldn't process it properly. Yeah. And I just kind of shelved it in my brain for a bit.
I'd have been disappointed with myself.
I'd have been gutted.
Appalling. Oh, Chris.
Yeah.
Oh.
What a way to finish the show, I think.
Tell you what.
There we are, everybody. God, leeches on the feet. yeah. Deary me. Yeah. They do
exist. Lucky it was just on her feet, to be honest.
Well, very true. Mine simply boggles. Well, there we are, everybody. I think we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for listening to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers. If you ever want to get in touch, sometimes like today, we throw the question out to you. So do check us out on social media, on Twitter and Insta at AQQAPod. We'll be back next week with another question for your good selves. Until then, thank you very much, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Thanks.
Thank you, everybody. See you next week.